Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Dark House. Okay, so here's some backstory before we get into the disturbing stuff. I work for a call center that handles real estate agents. I'm pretty much a glorified assistant to agents, but to about 300 different agents a day. I schedule appointments to show homes for them, and I call homeowners, tenants, and listing agents to get approval to show their homes. It's a pretty monotonous job, but it pays well enough, and I get to sit down instead of be on my feet for 8 hours. Sometimes, though, the monotony is broken by some pretty odd or interesting homeowners. Old folks that have had their home forever and can't use a cell phone or computer. Or disgruntled people who are about to foreclose with a bank and just want to swear and have you identify with them. They're all usually pretty funny, at least in retrospect. What I'm about to tell you about now is not one of those instances. My day started out fine enough. Aside from an intensely humid walk to work, I was feeling pretty good. As hot as it was, it looked bright and colorful everywhere, and I was in a pretty good mood. Sat down, stuffed a meal bar down my throat, and started making calls. About an hour into my workday, I came across an appointment for a listing here in Texas. It was for a house on a farm road, and the price was pretty high for that market. It had been withdrawn from the market for years, and it had only just come back up for sale about 2 days ago. And like a lot of agents, one real estate agent saw the price and picture. Both were very nice and probably, without even going out there, scheduled a showing for one of his buyers. This property had a listing agent with no contact info. That already struck me as odd. Sometimes an agent sneaks in without contact info by setting up online, but it's pretty rare. It's extremely rare for an agent like that to list a home. It should actually be impossible due to our company policy, but it happens. Usually only on listings that have been in our system since the beginning, much like this one. It made me hesitate, but when you have to make about 400 calls a day, you don't hesitate for long on anything. I checked the contacts list and there was one choice. It didn't have a name, just said home. This is not as rare. Whether it's bad work ethic on our behalf or a homeowner who wants to remain anonymous, a lot of tenants and sellers don't list their names. I didn't think too much of it and went to make the call. I phoned the home number for the house and it rang and rang. After about 10 rings, I was ready to hang up and mark it as it did not answer. But then I got the machine. It was a generic automated voice that answered. I hate those more than nearly any annoying seller. They take forever and they're so loud and robotic. Just a pet peeve, I guess. Hello. No one is available right now to take your call. Please leave message for... The automated voice drolled out the long phone number as I motioned my hand in a hurried manner, like I could somehow speed it up through my impatience. Once the beep sounded, I began my usual spiel. Hi, this is Wayne from my company's name. I'm calling about your home on the address. I have an agent named... Gave the name of the showing agent... Who would like to show your home to a buyer today at... I was cut off. The phone clicked and I could instantly hear what I could only describe as an old-timey 30s music echoing through the home. It was accompanied by a low slapping or thumping sound, like someone was dancing very slowly and loudly by themselves. The sounds were soon accompanied by a heavy and anxious breathing right up against the phone on the other end. Hello, is this the homeowner for... and I gave him the address. I asked, already getting the creeps. There was a chuckle and snort through the heavy breathing. Then just more music, slapping and heaving. I could tell it was a man's voice. Sounded like a big man. Hello, sir? I asked again. Yeah? A raspy voice said. Then nothing else aside from that disgusting breath gurgling up and down. Yes, sir. I have an agent that would like to show your home between 12 and 1 today. Would that be possible? I asked, running through the words. They got buyers with them? the voice asked. Well, no shit, I thought, but didn't say. Yes, sir. How many? He almost interrupted me. I'm not sure, sir. At least one, I answered. Caught me a bit off guard. I'd never had a seller ask me that before. He grumbled for a minute, and I could swear I heard someone scream bloody murder from somewhere in the apparently large house. I wanted to pretend it was part of the song, but there had been no vocals up to that point, and the scream wasn't exactly melodic. The slapping stopped, and I started to suspect that it had never been slapping to begin with, but maybe chopping? I shuddered, and then he spoke. Well, all right, send him over. We'll entertain some new guests. He laughed heartily, and I could hear the phlegm in his throat. He hung up before I had a chance to say anything else. I felt slimy somehow, but he gave me approval, and I was glad to be done with the call. I approved the appointment and went to the next call. A few calls went by, and I had completely forgotten about the whole thing. I just absorbed myself in my mind-numbing work, powering through my day. It wasn't until about 3 hours later that I got a call from a homeowner. They had been called earlier for a showing and the agent never showed up. I pulled up their information and as soon as I saw the agent's name, I got a chill up my spine. It was the same agent that had shown the house with the music and the screaming. I pulled his profile up on my screen. I wasn't even paying attention to the complaints of the homeowner on the line. I saw that his appointment was the next on his schedule and had been past the showing time for an hour. He never showed after going to that house on the farm road. I rushed the angry homeowner off the phone with whatever bullshit customer service response my brain manufactured. I don't even remember what I said. I tried calling the agent, but he didn't answer. It went straight to voicemail. With real estate agents, that's pretty common, but this time it was unnerving. I called his office under the guise of getting approval for an open house on one of his listings. Usually a surefire way to skip through the lies of he's not in the office right now or he's currently with a client. But his assistant seemed sincere when she told me he hadn't returned to the office today and that he wasn't currently answering his cell phone. She even seemed a little worried as though this wasn't normal for him. I tried to reassure myself that it was fine. It's quite regular for agents to just not answer their phones for days at a time. I pushed the weird and dark thoughts from my mind and went about my day. But like a fly that won't stop buzzing around your face, the thought just wouldn't leave my mind. The sound of the screaming, the odd old music, and the heaving, grunting man who seemed all too happy for visitors. What the hell did I send those people into? I finally decided to contact the police. Somewhere in the middle of a mostly sleepless night, I decided it was really the only thing I could do, and that I should do. I would have horrible nightmares of running through old oakwood hallways in a dim and moldy house somewhere in the backwoods of Texas, the record player moaning out that old-timey tune as someone hacks away at some poor soul inside that house. The screams echoed off the wet walls with a peeling, dingy wallpaper. I couldn't tell if I was getting closer to the sounds or further away as I ran. I just ran and couldn't force myself to look back. I woke up and was pretty resolute in my decision. I didn't bother with my usual routine today of exercising or catching up or emails. I just threw my clothes on, ate some slightly burnt toast and downed an energy drink, and booked it for the bus. When I got to work, I went straight to the branch manager and filled him in on the situation. His concern was comically light, but he knew policy and understood what to do. He put in a welfare check and notified the local police over there. I tried to tell myself that was enough. I sat down at my desk and started making calls. I tried to push the awful thoughts out of my head, and for a couple of hours, I nearly forgot about the anxious feeling I'd been going through since yesterday. Then, that was all ruined when I came across an appointment approval for a local agent. My eyes scanned over the address for the home, and I could immediately feel the blood rush up to my face and brain. I felt a snap sweat beckoning to seep out of my skin. It was the house on the farm road. The house of music, screams, and chopping. I panicked for just a moment. I didn't know what I should do. And I felt like if I didn't decide soon, someone was going to get hurt or worse. I hit my brake button and rushed to my manager's office. I'm sure I looked off because he gave me a confused look and asked what was wrong. I ignored his question and spat out one of my own. That house on FM address, did we ever hear about it? I nearly shouted. Yeah, my manager said with an almost amused hesitance. The police called back. They checked the home out, said it was a little run down, but otherwise pretty nice. What? I was actually kind of pissed. It felt like he was writing me off. What about the creepy guy and the screaming? They said there was no one there, furniture and the like, but no sign of people. The contact must have been for the owners, not the tenants. And the agent apparently texted his office last night, said the buyer lost interest in the listing and needed to be scheduled some other time. He rambled on while he stared at his three computer screens. Why don't you set the address as a courtesy listing? Streamline the process. I was so furious. I could feel the red in my face. A courtesy listing? That would mean that we wouldn't even need to get approvals to send agents to the home. Anyone who scheduled would just get approval. I just blew him off and went back to my desk. It was obvious that avenue was going nowhere. I pulled the appointment screen back up and fumbled with motions of what to do. Finally, I simply went to the next step dictated by company policy. I called the agent to let her know she was good to show the home. Hello, this is agent so-and-so with so-and-so office, the lady answered with a chipper voice. I could hear two other people as well. She had at least two clients with her. I already started to worry. Hi, this is Wayne with, and I gave her my company name. I'm calling in concern to your appointment at this address. I hurried through before she cut me off. Oh yeah, I got the text. We're actually walking up to the property right now, she said in an excited tone, like she already knew this was going to be the one her buyers would close on. Oh no, I blurted out. I scrambled for a way to keep them out of the house without coming off crazy. Actually, ma'am, we're showing a restriction on the home. I'm sorry, but it doesn't seem to be showable at the moment. Well, that can't be right. The owners are here, letting us in, she said, with a chuckle, hiding her annoyed reaction. She called out to someone. Hello, sir. I felt my heart start to thud in my chest like a tribesman on a war drum. I didn't know what to say, but I couldn't just let her and her buyers walk into this. Excuse me, ma'am. I called into the phone loudly. She didn't answer. I could hear her voice as she approached the house. It was obvious the phone was away from her ear. I listened intently. Hi, sorry if we interrupted something, the agent said in her sweet voice, but you could hear it falter towards the end. There was that sickening laughter I'd heard yesterday. It was him, the man all too happy to have guests and likes to sit in the company of screams. His guttural laugh sent a chill up my spine and caused the hairs on my neck to raise. Ma'am, please, wait a moment. I called into the phone, but again, no answer. Some of the other reps around me began to stare at me. Just the sound of footsteps through grass and that awful laughing. Then I heard a sound that nearly made me shit myself. There was a deafening roar of a chainsaw thundering to life. It was close to the phone, like the agent was holding it herself. But I knew that wasn't the case. The blaring sound of the chainsaw engine quickly coupled with a wet, tearing sound and a high-pitched scream. Then the phone disconnected and all I heard was the fast beeping of a busy signal. I was now actually sweating. I felt sick to my stomach and I'm pretty sure I was pale. I called the showing agent right back, but she didn't answer. I didn't want to, but I then dialed the home number for the listing. It rang for a few moments, then picked up. There was that music again, much louder, but the same exact song. I could hear the chopping with much more intensity now, and it was clearly something heavy and soft being hacked. Then the laughing was there, right into the phone, hurting my ears. The heavy bastard on the other end bellowed his disgusting laugh until I couldn't take it and hung up. It didn't seem like long, but it was all I could take. I immediately got up to speak with my manager, but he just left for the day. I gathered a few other supervisors on duty, and we all listened to the call again. Only one of them agreed to how absurd and dangerous the situation seemed. Everyone else just figured the agent was done with me and the homeowners were landscaping. I thought that was bullshit. I didn't want to think about what actually happened. But it wasn't landscaping. I argued with myself what to do, but only for a few very stressful minutes. I clocked out for break and I called the police, this time from my own phone. I told them everything, and they said they'd already sent a car out and found nothing. I very firmly explained to them that this was different and they needed to send a car out now. I felt like no one was taking this serious enough, not even the police. About 2 hours later, I got a call from the police station. I didn't even care that I was at my desk and on the clock. I took the call. The woman on the line sounded so disinterested, it made me a little angry. "Mr., using my last name, just following up with you, we did send a vehicle to the location at the address you provided. There was no sign of any occupants or visitors or clear signs of disturbance. Thank you for your concern." And then she just hung up on me. I couldn't fucking believe it. I was almost as mad as I was worried. I don't know what the hell to do. I feel like I don't have a lot of options here. And no one's as concerned as I am. Or concerned at all. This is bad, everyone, and I think it's only going to get worse. I'm still alive. The fucked up things that I've been forced to see. Okay. I can write this. I feel like I have to write it now. I went, everyone, like a goddamn fool. I went to the house on the farm road. Of all the stupid decisions I've made in my life. I'm getting ahead of myself. I guess y'all left off after the poor folks had gone to the house and I heard that damn chainsaw. The awful whip ripping of flesh, the screams, like I had mentioned. I got nowhere with my employers or even the police. It looked like I was the only person who gave a shit that it was very likely people who were being killed. Gruesomely killed, and it wasn't going to stop. That being said, I sure as hell didn't have the nerve to do anything. At least, not on my own. I had the day off from work. Thank fucking Christ. I called my friend Mario and asked if he wanted to hang out. Mario's my best friend and always an intelligent mind to bounce thoughts off of. We got together for drinks and I unloaded my whole story on him. In retrospect, it may have been a bad idea to confess to Mario. He's the type of guy to act. "We have to go out there," he said to me, finishing off his second Dos Equis. We probably shouldn't have been drinking that early in the day, but the kind of story I was telling pretty much warranted it. "No, we certainly don't." I put a full scheduler blocker on the home. "No agent can show it as long as no one takes my blocker off," I said, starting on my third screwdriver. "That's not going to last long, and you know it. Besides, these assholes need to pay. Look, you have a gun, so do I. Jaeger's in town. Let's all just go out there. You can bring your GoPro and get some evidence. If anyone pulls something, we'll mow him down." And he made a gun motion with his hand as he spoke. It may have been the alcohol, but it didn't seem like the worst idea. Jaeger was a friend of ours that had just gotten back from active duty. Another 20-something with nothing to lose and always in the mood for a life-threatening adventure. And Mario and I went to the range enough times to convince ourselves we were good shots. "We can at least take a look around outside. See if they have the agent's car or something," I said after a long time thinking. Not long enough. I now know. We called Jaeger and we all headed out in his truck. Jaeger had a shotgun, pistol in his back pocket, and a Tonto machete on his belt. I had my .45 and a very sharp pocket knife in my back pocket. Mario had his pistol and whatever else was on him. We got to the road at about 1:30 after 2 hours of driving through the backwoods and hill country. It was at least a half hour away from the last town, which was little more than a gas station and an RV park. The rocky and jagged road led up to a large clearing of golden grass and a big blue and white house in the middle. It loomed on a round hill with a single low-hanging cedar tree just off to the left of the house. We didn't leave the cover of the trees right away. Jaeger pulled his truck off the side of the road about a quarter of a mile before the clearing. We carefully walked up to the edge of the tree line and watched the house for a while. When we decided that it looked clear, Mario dashed up to the corner of the house. He peeked into a window very slowly. He lowered back down and waved us over. Jaeger and I both ran with our bodies low to the ground up to Mario. We quickly but quietly hunched down and propped up against the wall next to him. I don't see anybody. I don't even think there are any lights on, just some nice old furniture, Mario whispered. All right. We didn't come here to look at furniture through windows, so let's just get this over with. Mario, you and I will go inside. Jaeger, check around the house, see if you find any cars or really anything weird. After that, wait at the front door inside and let us know if you see anyone coming. I gave orders as I pulled my pistol out and checked the action on it, as well as turned off to safety. Mario and Jaeger just nodded in response, and Jaeger started heading stealthily around the side of the home. Mario and I headed up to the front door. I entered the code into the lockbox, and it beeped and produced the key. I briefly thought about how I'd definitely get fired for this if we got caught. Then I realized grimly, that would probably be the least of our worries if we did get caught. I slowly stepped in, gun drawn. I didn't call out or make a single sound. Mario followed in behind me and gently closed the screen door, but left the front door just an inch shy of shut. We headed into the living room first. The open windows allowed a soft breeze in that fluttered the pretty curtains. The sunlight cast long columns of dancing dust through the room that provided the only light. There were black and white pictures of some family that presumably had lived there. It wasn't bright enough to get a good look at any of them. There was a piano in the corner with a cover loosely draped over it, gathering a thick layer of dust. The furniture was nice and obviously very old, made of engraved wood and finely stitched cushions. Nothing in this room seemed like it got much use, though. Mario and I made our way through the living room and into the dining room. It was much the same as the last room. Beautiful furniture and pictures of old white people on the walls. But this room didn't have nearly as much dust. Aside from that, I didn't notice much difference, so we kept moving on into the kitchen. I opened the swinging door and was immediately assaulted by the smell. Bleach stung my nose first, then another separate odor, a stench that apparently could not just be bleached away. The only thing I could compare it to was moldy cheese or roadkill. The scent was surprising for its own reasons, but even more so because the kitchen looked spotless at the first glance. I hesitated to go any further, but I pulled my camera out with my left hand and held the gun tightly in my right. I scanned over the countertops and pulled open drawers as Mario began to look through the cabinets. We both came across a plethora of very sharp and high-quality cutlery and butcher equipment. Creepy, but not out of the ordinary. I saw the fridge in the corner. It was old as well, with a chrome handle and a big circular thermostat on the front. It looked like something from a vintage Coke ad. "Where the fuck is that smell coming from?" Mario whispered as he began to wander the kitchen for it. "I don't know," I whispered back in a disinterested voice. I was fixated on the refrigerator. At once, both compelled to open it and terrified to even come near it. Though go near it, I did, albeit at a snail's pace. I somehow registered Mario coughing right as I gripped the cold handle. I positioned my camera and hit record. I pulled the door open slowly and a thick fog of frost spilled out in slow motion. I began to open the door further, and through the fog, I started to make something out. It was hard to tell right at first, but quickly, I could discern detail. I saw four pale fingers with purple nail polish and a nice diamond ring. Just as I saw the better part of a human hand, I heard Mario mutter something brief and angrily, followed by a distinct sound of vomiting. I shut the refrigerator door and spun around, pistol ready and heart racing. Mario was hunched over, wiping the sides of his mouth and facing away from a large bucket. It was pulled from under the kitchen sink, two other buckets just like it sitting there as well. I ran to Mario, bypassing the bucket but hitting its wall of stench. "You okay?" I asked. He nodded its head and motioned to the bucket. I didn't want to look, but just like the fridge, I had to. I leaned over the bucket with my sleeve over my mouth and nose and my camera still recording in my other hand. And the bucket was a mixture of shit, piss, blood, and hair. I wanted to vomit myself, but just managed to keep it back. I saw a few teeth bobbing in the rancid liquid and I quickly turned away. I could only stand to record so much. Mario gave me a look that said, "Let's get the fuck out of here," and I gave him a nod that said, "Sounds good to me." We turned to head out of the kitchen just as we heard the screen door slam shut. It was immediately followed by Jaeger's voice. "Guys," Jaeger said from the front door, a disconcerting tone in his voice. Mario and I rushed through the dining room and rounded through the living room. We halted in our tracks when we saw a disarmed and handcuffed Jaeger with a pistol to the back of his head. Holding the gun was a sheriff's deputy with big aviator glasses, a fuzzy blonde mustache, and a shit-eating grin. "Now you boys put them guns to ground, or I show you what pretty boy's brains here looks like," the deputy said in a thick hillbilly accent as he shoved the barrel of the gun into Jaeger's scalp. You could see the anger in Jaeger's eyes, and that's when I noticed the cut on his lip. "Hey, that's not necessary, man." "We'll put our guns down," I said as I slowly and clearly put my gun on the floor. I looked over, Mario still gripping his tightly. He looked at me, and he could tell I wasn't going to shoot a cop. I fucking wish I had now. He put his pistol down too, and the deputy had us kick them under the couch. "Now, why don't we all have ourselves a talk outside?" he said in that thick voice that was so cliche, it didn't seem legit. He motioned Mario and I to go first, and he kept Jaeger at gunpoint between us. As I passed, I could smell the heavy air of nicotine liquor and something else. Something rank and a little familiar. We stepped outside, and the deputy's cruiser was right in front of the house. I was pissed at Jaeger for a brief moment, then remembered the gravity of the situation. This might be the last time I see Jaeger, and I didn't want to be angry with him. The smelly deputy shoved Jaeger into the back seat of the cruiser and waved his gun for Mario and I to join him. Mario, pissed as he was, began to head for the car. "Wait, what are we being charged with? You can't just arrest us. You haven't even asked for our names," I started in. I've been arrested before, and this was all wrong. "Oh, we got ourselves a smartass here, you..." The deputy pointed his gun at Mario. "Get in the car." Mario looked at me one more time, then got in the back seat with Jaeger. The deputy pointed his gun at me now. "You, put your hands on the hood." "Fuck you," I said, and stonewalled the son of a bitch. He cocked the pistol. The barrel was pointed right at my forehead, and it was a big fucking gun. 6-shot revolver, and it looked like a .357 Magnum. Hearing the hammer on that beast get drawn made my knees want to give up. I didn't show it, though, and I'm at least proud of that. "I said, put your fucking hands on the hood, asshole," the deputy said in a calm but frustrated voice. I stared at him for a second longer, then did as I was told. I ran through a million scenarios in my head of how to play this, and none of them could I dodge a bullet. As I propped against the hood, I could feel the heat from the engine coupled with the hot summer sun on my back. The smell of him laid all over me like a blanket as he leaned in to whisper in my ear. "I like the ones that have attitude," he said in an almost sensual voice. I remember thinking to yell, "What the fuck?" And at that point, was fully prepared to elbow him in the face and take my chances trying to grab his gun. But before any of that thought had taken a chance to materialize, I felt my teeth clack together and I tasted a cloud of chalk in my mouth. Then there was darkness. I woke up with a ringing pain in my head, and I could feel the cold blood streaming thinly from my head, just behind the ear, down my neck, and onto my chest. I could tell I was hanging from my wrist and standing. I opened my eyes, and at first only saw black. I could hear muffled breathing near me, and then a loud scream of pain from somewhere else. It was Jaeger's voice screaming. At least I thought so. I'd never heard him scream. Not like that. My eyes adjusted to the dark, and I saw Mario without his shirt being suspended just on the tips of his feet by a chain from the ceiling. He was covered in streaks of his own blood and had short cuts and gashes all over. There was a few other chains and hooks hanging from the ceiling, a stained and rusty sink in the corner, and a large metal table in the center of the room. Next to the table was a smaller, fold-out metal table with a slew of what looked like both surgical tools and butcher knives. There was blood splattered on a few. "Are you okay? How's your head?" Mario asked me through his erratic breathing, yet with a calm demeanor. "Fuck my head, are you all right?" I asked frantically. "That piece of shit is just toying with me. cutting just deep enough and in the right places. I don't think he wants us dead yet, Mario said, his brow covered in sweat and blood. We heard Jaeger scream again and both looked to the one door in the room. Where is he? How long have they been? I asked. I don't know. After you, he knocked me out too. I woke up and he started to. Mario didn't finish. But he wouldn't have time to, regardless. At that moment, the door opened, and at first we saw a young woman who was dirty and bruised, yet well-dressed. We quickly realized she was being led from behind by the hair. Her head yanked back, and her cries muffled. Behind her was the deputy, smiling that same fucking grin. As he began to bring her closer, I noticed her mouth was sewn shut with a thin leather strap, and there was a poorly bandaged stump where her right hand should have been. I was in an instant both disgusted and furious. The deputy shoved her down to her knees, and she collapsed without a fight. This poor girl looked younger than me, and she'd seen so much hell. This here is the one, the deputy announced to her, pointing his pistol at me. He's the boy who could have saved your sorry hide. Could have turned your skinny little ass back around, and you'd never come back across this place. And that's when the unholy realization hit me like a semi to the chest. This poor girl was the last agent that showed this home. This piece of shit had saved her and was now parading her in front of me. I felt so fucking guilty and wanted so badly to rewind time, reach through the phone and stop her, somehow. But I couldn't, now. And I could only watch this all in horror. The deputy pulled a long razor blade from the small table, the kind you see barbers use in old westerns. He yanked the girl's head back and she began to weep. Hey, motherfucker, stop! Why don't you fucking fight me, you pussy, you piece of shit? You have to hurt a woman? I started yelling anything I could think to stop him. I could vaguely hear my own screaming throat and pounding heart, but I could tell Mario was doing the same. The deputy just smiled that same shit-eating grin and sliced the poor girl's throat from one ear to the other. A thin red line formed, then opened to a gaping second mouth that streamed out a river of crimson. I jerked and pulled at my chains as I cursed the bastard and his aviators and crazy smile. He licked the blade as he stared at me, and he didn't flinch as the razor cut his own tongue and his blood mixed with the girl's. I wanted to be a million fucking miles from him, but not before I kicked his head in. He started to walk towards me, the bloody razor in his hand, and my own reflection getting closer in his aviators. I jerked and yanked as hard as I could on my chains, gritting my teeth and screaming obscenities at him, begging him to fight me like a man. He stopped and started to laugh, somehow also in a hillbilly accent. He turned to his little table of atrocities, pulled it close to us, and started to pick out a new toy to fuck me up with. I didn't stop pulling at my chains. It was starting to really hurt, and I could tell I'd already scraped off a lot of skin. My hands were getting pretty bloody, and they'd hurt like a bitch, but I didn't care. I just wanted to kill him. Here's the one, little Mr. Attitude, the deputy said as he seemed to find just what he was looking for. He didn't get a chance to turn around and use it, though. I'd pulled one hand free, and the chain rattled quickly as I leaped for the deputy. I tackled him, and we slammed against the big metal table. We both went to the floor, and I quickly wrapped my chain around his neck as I straddled his back. I pulled the chain as tight as I could, and I could see his face turn colors while he scratched and clawed at me in vain. After a few quick choked moans, I heard his windpipe crush, and he stopped moving and went limp. I didn't let go for another 30 seconds. I released my grip finally and let his smelly corpse fall to the ground. He sadly didn't have a gun, but I grabbed the keys from his belt and unlocked myself and Mario. Mario nearly fell to his knees, but I managed to catch and prop him up. At that moment, I realized we hadn't heard Jaeger scream for a while, and like a fucking cosmic joke, the door burst open. Standing there was a man who barely fit in the doorframe. He was at least 6'8", and dressed all in dark leather. He had a butcher's apron that was splattered with blood, along with a giant filleting knife. His face was completely covered in a black leather gimp mask. The only thing I could describe would be the creep from Pulp Fiction, but imagine it on a linebacker for the Cowboys covered in blood. Mario and I stared at him for a second as he stared back and quickly assessed the situation, panting heavily beneath his mask. Then he squealed in a gurgling voice and charged at me with his knife. I pushed Mario aside, and thank God my muscle memory kicked in, and the year of Goju-Ryu weren't for shit. Like with any large man I ever sparred with or actually fought, I always go low and for a big man's knees. All that weight channeled right into a very vulnerable part of the body. As he ran straight at me, I sidestepped low into him. I sent a very solid right jab right into the side of his knee, and I heard a loud pop. He stumbled just past me, and I could hear the fillet knife whiz through the air past my head. He crashed into the wall, and I didn't stop to see how he landed. I grabbed Mario and booked it out of the room. I could hear the large man yelling and getting to his feet. I closed the door behind me and saw it had locks on this side. I locked them all and jumped back as a loud thud hit the door and shook the whole wall. I spun around and was in a dim hallway of locked doors, all but one door at least. We ran down the hallway to the open door and saw Jaeger tied straddled to a chair with his back facing out. He had long thin strips of skin missing from his back. The big fucker had been filleting our friend. I felt my stomach turn, a feeling I was starting to get used to. I quickly untied him and Mario and I helped him out of the room. We started towards the other end of the hallway of big locked doors as the thundering continued from the room we were in. We got to the end of the hall and a short staircase led up and out into the dining room from out of the floor. The table had been moved aside and there was a secret door that led to their fucked up butcher dungeon. We started to rush out of the house when I stopped. "Wait, Mario, can you walk?" I asked. "Yeah, what are you thinking?" Mario said as I pulled away from him and Jaeger. "Take Jaeger to the truck and give me your lighter," I said as he reached in his pocket and handed me his little gas station lighter. Mario has always been the type of friend to trust me and just go along with the plan. He turned and helped Jaeger out the front door. I ran to the kitchen as I grabbed the tablecloth from the big dining table. I yanked the stove out a foot or two and kicked the gas pipe loose in the back, then tore through the cabinets until I came across a bottle of cooking brandy. I hauled ass back out of the house as I heard loud crashing and splintering noises from down below. I got outside and headed for the dead deputy's car. It was night outside, and I wondered for a brief second how long I'd been out and how long Mario and Jaeger had been tortured. I focused on the moment again and doused the tablecloth in the brandy and shoved it into the gas intake. I started to reach for the lighter when I heard the distinct sound of a chainsaw roaring to life from somewhere in the house. I almost pissed myself. I wrenched the lighter out of my pocket and started to flick it on. It wouldn't light. I tried it again. Nothing but sparks. Again and again and again. Nothing. I could hear the chainsaw getting louder. My blood was pumping so fast I felt like my veins were on fire. I held the lighter up to the moonlight and saw that there was a sliver of lighter fluid at the very bottom. "Oh, fuck," I thought. I took a deep breath, turned the lighter upside down, then back. I flicked the wheel and button once, and it lit. I set the cloth aflame and ran like hell. I didn't look back, but I could hear the chainsaw like it was on my heels. Then all I heard was a ringing, and I was off my feet. I rolled through the big yellow grass as chunks of fire debris rained down around me. I couldn't hear anything and my head and body hurt, but I got right back on my feet and started running again. I headed straight for the tree line and toward the truck. I could see it on the road, Mario and Jaeger in it and ready to go. I glanced back once just to see the fire. It was huge and the giant black column of smoke was already beginning to block out the sky. I didn't see anyone, so I assumed the big man was still in the house when it blew. Fucking A. I got back in the truck and hauled ass all the way back to the city. I knew that Mario and Jaeger needed medical attention right away. But knowing the deputy was killing people in that town, I refused to take them to that hospital. It only took an hour to get back to the city the way I was driving, and I got them both checked in. That was all yesterday. And Mario and Jaeger are stable and going to recover. I don't know what to do now. I killed a cop, so I really don't want to tell anyone of authority. I told the people at the hospital that a group of gang members tried to rob us, and we got into a bad fight. They seemed skeptical when they saw Jaeger's wounds, but they didn't ask too many questions. All I know is that we killed those fuckers, and I'm happy about that. I have to go back to work tomorrow. I don't know how I'm going to take 400 calls a day when I know what can happen when just one goes very wrong.